The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Track with Hinch and Rossi.
So guys, fun story. I flew back from Colorado. I finally bit the bullet and am one of those idiots that has AirPods. I chose to get AirPods because Kelly got AirPods and I realized
Did you get the AirPods Pro or the AirPods?
No, like the new ones, but not like the headphone ones, like the little ones.
Yeah, the Pro.
The new ones.
The Pro.
And I always was like, man, people that wear those look so stupid and blah, blah, blah. And then she started playing with them. And like, I realized how like
they're amazing,
advanced and impressive they actually are. So I was like, fine. And because they're lower profile, I feel like they're less annoying. And you look less like the guys that have the
Bluetooth.
Because
they're bright white, so you can't hide it. That's the problem.
No,
I'm with
no,
you.
This guy can. No. This guy can.
Well, yeah, true.
It's been like a year since you've seen my ears.
Clearly, we know you don't care about your appearances. Just that's true. The way you are. But like, that's no. True. So these are the stem is probably half the length.
Yeah.
They are more inconspicuous. Anyways, first weekend of using them. Well, I lost them. So I pulled up the little tracking thing on them and it said Indianapolis Airport. I was like, oh, cool. Like, of course, that makes sense. So I rush ordered another set from Best Buy and they came. I was like, fine, it's an expensive lesson. I knew I was going to lose them. I knew I was going to lose the new ones. And sure enough, the technology in them is really good, but like the location apparently goes to when they're in a washing machine and it just spits out a random location. Like, they were in my house the whole time. It said that they were in Terminal B at Indy Airport. So like,
well, that's probably the last time they connected to something.
But see, so what is the point of then?
Yeah,
like no, the location. I didn't realize that was a thing. I thought it was like every other Apple device. It was like a live update.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I guess because there's no cell card in it or anything, right? So it's got to just go off the last
logically,
thing.
Logically, that makes sense, but
yeah.
Still.
No, in the moment, yes, I agree with you. That would have been very frustrating. Now,
so you have two sets of AirPods.
I was going to say, having put mine through the washer, I know that you now have two working sets because they will still work.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So now I'm double the asshole. So
well, but that's starting from where you already were, which was. I mean, pretty high up there on the asshole
so you're already
scale.
Like five times the asshole of the morning of the average person.
Exponentially increasing now. Yeah.
It's so funny, man, because I had the exact same experience where I saw everybody getting them and I was like, this day, just everybody looks ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. And then my dad got them for Christmas one year and I was helping him connect them to his phone and I was playing around with them like, damn, these are actually like kind of cool. And technology behind these is pretty impressive. Damn it. And then of course went home and just ordered my own pair.
I got a pair when I guess I had enough points on my credit card to get one of the new Pros. And I think I texted Becky right away because I know she from Vegas, I remember she does the noise canceling thing. And the noise canceling on the AirPods Pro is amazing. So I texted her like right away.
Thanks.
I know she got them.
That then cost me two new pairs of AirPods because she got them. Like, I'm not getting a new pair. My pair are fine. Then I tried hers. I'm like, these are so much better.
And they are, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. So, so now we have four sets in our house, two perfectly working old sets and now two perfectly working new sets.
So what I'm hearing is I'm going to get a lot of hand-me-down AirPods.
Yes. amazingly, Becky has not yet spilt a pair of AirPods, and we still have all of them intact.
I mean, Tim, I can give you a hand-me-down popcorn machine.
I just bought you that popcorn machine.
Oh, that hurts.
Oh, you mean the first popcorn machine I bought you.
The first popcorn machine.
So I bought him a popcorn machine. It didn't work that well, so I had to buy him another popcorn machine.
But here's
what happened to the first popcorn machine?
It just didn't work that well.
It just wasn't very good. So he in a panic, drunkenly ordered, I think, what is quite possibly the most expensive popcorn machine on Amazon. And I know that he kind of regretted it, because the next morning he was like, I ordered you a popcorn machine yesterday. I was like, you sure did. And so it took like an hour to assemble. Like it's 6 feet tall. Like it's actually quite.
Oh, it's like on the cart and the whole bit kind of thing.
Yeah. And so I'm very.
I want to be clear here. I didn't buy you a popcorn machine. I bought me a popcorn machine that I'm keeping at your house.
Fair.
I'm going to get the lion's share of the use out of this.
That is probably true.
Well, that's because we're all still eating through all the popcorn we bought off Hazel's popcorn sale six months ago.
I still have some of that.
I just threw it all out, guys. Like, I got to the point where I was like, I had made like a quarter of a dent into all of them except the peanut butter one, which I guess Tim and I ate.
Her first Girl Scouts meeting was last week, so get ready for those sales.
I mean,
how is that possible? I've already like been approached by several Girl Scouts about
cookies. Well, because no, like her first ever meeting was last week. They started a new troop.
Keep in mind,
for the neighborhood.
James, California is really not a part of America.
That's true. We're our own thing.
It's just warm Canada.
We just pay more in taxes than most states and
get less benefits.
Right.
Cool.
So
I
guess in Canada we pay more taxes but get more benefits. So yeah, Canada is still better than California.
Yeah. And I can say that considering that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're like.
So I think, James, there was some stuff you wanted to talk about. So this is probably.
This is probably, yep. As fans of the show might have seen through the social mediums of the world, last week I lost my dad, Papa Hinch, or the Stash, as he was affectionately known throughout the various paddocks over the years. And, you know, I more than anything, I just wanted to say thank you to, you know, everybody that that reached out. You know, it was obviously a very difficult time for the family. He'd been sick for a while, you know, and there's every cliche under the stars that, you know, I could say right now about losing a parent. But I will spare you all that, short of, even though you know it's coming, it doesn't make it any easier. Not that you'd think it would. But genuinely the incredible outpouring of support from everybody on, you know, everything was awesome. And, everybody that shared stories, of running into him at the paddock, that was, I think, one of the coolest things for me was seeing messages on, you know, Instagram or Twitter or whatever from people that I didn't necessarily even really know. Just, oh yeah, hey, I ran into your dad one time at Milwaukee in 2012. You know, and just hearing all these little stories of people that he bumped into, that he met for, you know, 10 minutes or less, you know, and remembered him and said that he was super nice and took time to talk to everybody. And stories like that were very cool to hear. I mean, we know how awesome he was to us and to his friends, but it was cool hearing how many strangers essentially got the opportunity to even just, you know, share some time with him for a few minutes and the effect that had on them and then remembering him like that. So, from myself and my family, just thank you all for all the support. It's been very helpful. It's been very cool. And he liked both you guys. Well, I mean, he knew you, Tim.
So I mean, I want to kind of segue that. I want to share a story,
please,
about Jeremy. And then I want to hear kind of your favorite one that was, I guess, submitted or shared with you that surprised you. So, James, you know the story well, but I didn't really know your family outside of yourself when I first came to IndyCar, and you being the ever gracious Canadian host and person that you are, allowed me to kind of stay in your home with Connor, which is you're a saint. You're a very good person for doing that. And what furthers your trust, whether it's misinformed or not, in the both of us, was you allowed your parents to stay. You allowed us to stay in your home while your parents were there, and you and Becky were away. And so I got to know Jeremy and Arlene very well, and developed a kind of a rapport with them that I really treasured. And so I was in the process of going to buy a house for the first time. I had never really done real estate for myself before. I'd always either done it as a transactional thing with my dad, and quite frankly, he took care of most of it. So this was one of the first one where I was kind of making the decisions all by myself. So I was sitting in your kitchen, at your kitchen breakfast table one morning, and was having coffee with your mom, and she was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm looking for houses." And little did I know that she loves houses.
She's a big fan of shopping for houses. Yeah.
Yep. You were in the middle still of your remodel, so your dad quickly kind of left the room because he didn't want to be involved in any other conversations having to do with houses. So Arlene and I got on Zillow and started hunting around. And like the very first one I clicked on, she was like, "You have to go see this today." And I was like, "Okay. Why?" And she was like, "It's great." And I said, "Okay." So I just submitted a request to see it from the website and got a response back. And they were like, "Oh, we could do tomorrow." And she was like, "We're coming with you." Okay. So me, Jeremy, and Arlene drive downtown to this townhome that I was looking at, and met the realtor. And they were like, "Oh," and the real estate lady was like, "Oh, Alex, so nice to meet you. And what are your parents' names?" I was like, "Jeremy and Arlene." And there was just no, like, I wasn't even going to bother explaining the fact that I had met these people a week ago, really. And so I went through the whole house, and they were pointing out the goods and the bads. And, you know, we kind of left there, and they were like, "Yeah, you need to buy that house. That's perfect for you." And I said, "Well, I really want like a pool." And they're like, "No, you don't." It's like, "I really want a house." "No, you don't." "I really want all this and this." And they said, "No, you don't. You're never going to be there. You're going to be traveling a lot. HOAs are the way to go. You don't want to have to deal with all the maintenance and all that stuff." Well, so fast forward a couple weeks, couple months, end up putting an offer on the house, buy the house. And that was the first house I ever bought, and stayed in it for a couple of years. And Jeremy and Arlene were the ones that kind of helped me, guided me through that process of kind of submitting the first offer and everything. I thought that was really special to meet people that, you know, had such an interest in helping someone that was, you know, not related to them, and really it didn't matter to them one way or another whether my first real estate transaction was successful or not, but they took the time and the effort to kind of walk me through it. So that was very special and something that I'll remember about your dad forever. And, you know, I loved getting to spend that time with them. So you're a very, very lucky guy to be able to call him your dad. So that's
why. No doubt, man. No doubt. And it's, you know, it's funny because one of the things that I've seen a lot of over, you know, just time in racing is, you see some of these parents and, you know, it's, yeah, fine. More often than not, it's dads. Right. And they are very like hesitant to get too close to other drivers, and like, especially teammates, like when you're in the junior categories, right. And you're coming up and your teammate, like it's, you know, it's the, everybody knows teammates, the guy you got to beat. Right.
Sure. It's the little league dad mentality for sure.
Like, right,
my kid's
right.
Better than yours.
And yeah. Right, right. Yeah, we call them hockey dads back in Canada, and it's, you know, wherever you're from, it's whatever it is. And my dad was just never like that. You know, even when I knew that like there were things that a certain guy would do that kind of like pissed him off or pissed me off or whatever, like he never let it show. Like it didn't matter, right? Like it wasn't important enough that he was not going to be very welcoming to that person when he saw him at the track the next time. And every teammate I've ever had has kind of made that comment, like, "Yeah, your dad's so nice." And even when we were, you know, banging wheels and trying to kick each other's ass for a championship or whatever, like he was always so nice and always so open. And, you know, here you rock up to IndyCar fresh out of Formula One, and he's like, "Yeah, come on, let's go buy a house together." You know, it just was that old cliche. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. he was awesome like that. And, you know, you asked about kind of the most surprising, you know, story that we've heard.
Or I guess your favorite one.
Well, it's, you know, my favorite one is actually, it's one that I knew, but it just sums them up so perfectly. My dad was, he was like the best racing dad in a lot of ways, because he, growing up karting, right? And you would have seen this a ton, Alex, and even it goes way past karting, but you see a lot of drivers where you get the sense that they're living their dad's dream and they didn't really care what they could have done. They could have done many things to make them happy. And this wasn't necessarily top of the list. And it was always really sad, right? And my dad was never like that. He was a big racing guy, loved motorsports, grew up in England, you know, so he obviously had that bug, and he's the reason I got into it, but he was never the reason that I stayed in it. And when I reached a certain point, he sort of stepped back and was like, okay, look, I acknowledge that I don't know enough to be helpful anymore, right? Like, I don't know how to work on this car, and you now have more experience racing than I ever did driving vintage race cars up in Ontario, right? So he's like, I'm going to leave you to do it and leave the professionals to do their jobs. And you're now a professional, you do your job. So like from a certain age, whatever it was, 16 years old, I never saw my dad with a stopwatch. You know, he never was like that ultra competitive. I knew he wanted me to win. I knew he was always supporting, but he was never like that. He never got down on me if I did something wrong. And he never was like, you know, he just wasn't in your face about it. And so he loved coming to the track, but he loved kind of keeping his distance and just letting the team do their things. And so I was racing in A1 GP. So this was still pretty early in my career. This would have been like 06, you know, fall of 06. And we were racing at Zandvoort in Holland. And I go through the day, and he kind of like is, you know, he's there, but I don't really see him too much. And we meet up at the end of the day, and I was like, so what did you do today? And he's like, well, it's the craziest thing. I went to the Heineken tent to go grab a beer, ran in. There was a guy there that was wearing a Canadian, like an A1 GP Team Canada jersey. So I walked up to him and was like, oh, you must be Canadian. And he was like, no, I'm Dutch, but my wife's brother's third cousin's nephew went to Canada once, and I just always kind of liked the idea of Canada, so I bought a Canada jersey instead of a Dutch jersey. And so we stayed there and ended up talking to this guy for like the rest of the day, probably down a couple Heinekens. And he was like, yeah. I'm like, oh, so that's cool. You kind of made a friend. He goes, yeah, he's coming to Toronto for the race this year. I'm like, what? And to this day, Erie is like a friend of our families. And he tries to come, you know, once a year to Canada, or at least make it to one IndyCar race. And it's just this random dude that was wearing a Canadian jersey at a racetrack. And so he just walked up and started a conversation, and it kind of started this lifelong friendship, you know, like they were made friends the rest of his life. You know, it was just such a dad move. It was so funny.
Yeah. But like, also, I mean, I don't even think you're that social.
No, I would have like noticed the jersey and been like, nice jersey. And then probably walked away.
Cool. Bye.
Yeah.
I do remember when my parents met Jeremy, when my mom and stepdad, he came over and we all had dinner and hung out. I just remember Larry, after you guys left, just goes, so that's where James gets it.
And I didn't even get all of it, you know? Like,
he just got a fraction of it.
Yeah. But he will be sorely missed, you know, by everybody that got the chance to know him. And it'll be weird not having him at the racetrack, but very glad for all the times that we did get together at the track. And one of my favorite moments is sitting up on my wall is him and I hugging in Victory Lane for my first win in St. Pete back in 13. I know that was a cool moment for both of us. And that's, you know, I'm sitting here in my office while we record this, and it's things like that. I can just look at it anytime and, you know, and just remember him the way that you want to. So God bless, Dad. I love you.
Well, cheers to all the dads out there. It's no, especially for the ones of us that are involved in racing. I speak from experience. Obviously, I've talked about it before, but I don't think any of us would really be able to be in this position without the sacrifice and dedication that our fathers kind of gave.
You had to end it with a dad joke.
I didn't mean to. I'm not even a dad. I don't even know where that came from, but I'm pretty proud of it. But yeah, I mean, just shout out to all the fathers out there. And for those of you that are fortunate enough to still have your fathers around, give them a hug, have a drink with them. As James said, cherish them as close as you can. So we love you all and appreciate you.
Now, we are in a time of year where racing is now happening regularly again. And who stayed up till 7 o'clock in the morning to watch the Daytona 500?
I did, but I want to talk about one other dad, if we can, really quick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course.
Tom Brady. You know.
Oh, yeah.
He's a dad.
I'm glad you brought that up.
He's a dad. He's a successful guy. He's a husband. Wow. I don't care.
And still somehow married up.
It is so unbelievable. Like, I know people hate Tom Brady, and I am just so at the point of it where it's like, you need to stop. I don't care what you think he did in the past. I don't care about your despise for the Patriots organization. You're witnessing something in athletic history that will never be done again. Enjoy it.
And that's, I got over my Tom Brady hatred.
Well, see, I always acknowledged that I wasn't anti-Tom Brady. I was anti-Patriots. I live in Indianapolis. You kind of have to be. Like, when I showed up here, when I moved here, I didn't know much about football, about American football. Apparently, that was kind of a rivalry. Right.
But there's a lot of people that hate Tom Brady because they like Peyton Manning so much. It really has nothing to do with
right. So I didn't know enough at the time. I just like, oh, boo Patriots. And then like I watched what Tom Brady did, and I'm like, okay, look, I'll say that I don't like Bill Belichick, but like I really respect what Tom. I don't like the Patriots. I really respect what Tom Brady does when he made the move to Tampa. Right. I will openly say that I'm like, I would love him to take them all the way because that would be such a cool story. And I love, as you said, Alex, I love watching sports history be made. Like as an athlete, as a sportsman, I think watching that stuff's incredible. And the show we did right before the Super Bowl, we had Ricky Taylor on. So obviously we were talking to him and talking about the 24-0. We didn't get a chance to kind of preview the Super Bowl. I had this whole list of things that I'd written out about Tom Brady and how awesome he was. Like I found this article about statistics of his that were just absolutely mind blowing. And the fact that first team in history to take Super Bowl to their hometown and then for him to win it, he's won what? 7 of 10 now?
7 of 10,
yeah. That's the most insane. And like, let's not even talk about all the passingness and touch. He was the most successful postseason quarterback in Bucs history before the Super Bowl even happened. In 3 games, he became the most successful quarterback in postseason franchise history. It's ridiculous.
Tom Brady is 3rd on the all-time team list of appearances in a Super Bowl.
Correct. So I was making the joke with someone. I'm like, I bet like young kids that are aspiring to be in the NFL, they're like, who do you want to play for when you grow up? And they just say Tom Brady because he's like his own team. He's more successful than most of the teams in the league.
At this rate, young kids will get to maybe catch passes from him.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a moment in the broadcast where the announcers were like, now kids watching at home, Tom Brady's older than your dad. And Hazel and I were watching it, and she was like, he's not really. I was like, he's like 13 years older than me, Hazel.
Like, he's double the age of some dads. Like,
what's
he's
phenomenal is, like, it's not like, you know, I have a lot of respect for Peyton. Peyton's last Super Bowl with the Broncos, great story.
Awesome.
Peyton played like garbage. Peyton was done. He was done. Tom, you know, he has his lulls. I think Tom's always had his lulls. He's always had his games where he threw a couple picks and all of that. Unlike, like, that's a little that kind of knocks him down a step from your Patrick Mahomes, your Aaron Rodgers, your, well, up until this year, your Drew Breeses, right? He always had those games. You're like, what, is he struggling or whatever? But like, legitimately, his deep ball has been garbage up until 2021. And now all of a sudden at 44 years old, 43 years old,
43,
he's throwing
a
deep ball better than he ever has in his career. And he's made his entire career on, you know, playing the kind of the zone coverages and the 10, 15 yard pickups and such. Now he's able to like accurately throw a ball 20, 30 yards. And like, that's phenomenal.
I think that's because everybody talked about how he couldn't do that. And I don't know if you know anything about Tom Brady. He loves proving people wrong. So here's a new strategy for Tom Brady haters out there. Show him some love. Tell him how great he is. Tell him his game's perfect. He could do nothing better. Tell him he can't retire. Yes, exactly.
It's like the moment in Happy Gilmore. Happy learned how to putt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like wasn't he like the last guy drafted the year he was drafted? And he just had this chip on his shoulder his entire career. And like that made him. Like his work ethic and the fact that like people doubted him is what made him. And every time someone doubts him, he comes back stronger. And
I'm just going to say it right here, right now. I just want to get this out there. Tom Brady can't, even if he wanted to, he would not be able to give me $1 million.
No, he won't, because his wife won't let him. You're right. But what's interesting is like people are like, oh, he's this great athlete, but he's a boring person. Super Bowl party in Tampa shows up and he shows up there on his boat, hammered, throwing in the Lombardi trophy to Gronk. Like, that's awesome.
Like, oh, and then so, tweeted out avocado tequila with weird calves. That was fantastic. That was fantastic.
And so that now, so I guess funny. Now Tom parties too.
And he's probably better at partying.
He's just getting better
with age. What don't you like about him? Man.
So
I'll admit, I was a full-on Tom Brady hater, and it was purely because I thought Peyton Manning was the best. I thought Peyton didn't get the credit he was due, especially given the absolute garbage O-line that Peyton had in Indianapolis. The conversation's done. Tom Brady's the best.
But it's BS that it took until now. Like, can we talk about how many Super Bowls Tom Brady won with zero weapons?
For sure. I mean, Peyton... Peyton's got two Super Bowls. So does Eli. They're like giving those things out. I mean, like, up to two. They obviously, it's like the first two are free if Eli's got two.
Let's be honest. Eli beat Brady for it.
I mean, Eli's
that's actually twice, a good which point,
is, which is unbelievable. And
that would be the games. Biggest knock on Tom Brady.
Can you believe that Eli has more than like Aaron Rodgers?
Yes.
That just doesn't seem right.
It doesn't, but like when you look at
it's just how it all works. I want to go back to when you were with the Tom partying thing. So like there was obviously that video of him coming off the boat, literally needing to be like held up by his shoulders and like controlled to get to it. It was incredible. So he retweeted it with your avocado tequila thing, whatever. I clicked on the comments just out of idle curiosity because I'm like, the guy's clearly now the best. You can't argue it. Just won his seventh. He's out having a bit of fun, which he's not normally seen doing. People must just be loving on him so hard. And I clicked on it, and still the Twitterverse was like crapping on him so hard. One of them was
what?
Like,
"The internet's bad?
Dude." I know. I'm Canadian. I try to like I believe that there's good still out there somewhere, And one of the comments was like, "You're a role model. How dare you be drunk in public and consume alcohol, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, no, he's a role model. Work super hard, win everything, and then party all you want. Like, that's the best role model a kid could have. Like, I got so fired up reading the comments on Twitter. Man, the worst.
Well, James, you mentioned... really, you know, working hard, winning, and then being able to party. Can we talk about the people specifically, like your Brad Keselowskis and Joey Logano's of the world, who worked really hard, did a good job, didn't win, but still probably partied? Or at least pretended to party?
Yeah. I don't know. That was probably going to be an awkward conversation in the shop the next day. I don't know. They would have probably wanted to show up looking pretty good on that one.
Well, why do you think awkward? Like, you think that was Brad or Joey's fault?
No, not necessarily. But it's just like you had two cars for the same team running up front, and they both ended up at the wall in the last lap. Like, that doesn't look good.
Right. But like, I mean, it's amazing to me.
No, you got to go for it.
Well, but he wasn't even really going for it. He was just in line and got drilled by the guy that ended up winning the race.
That's also true. It's so like, funny, like reading all the stuff afterwards and how like, you know, they're all trying to plan their run, right? So Brad's backing off to get the bigger run and Joey's seeing him back off. So he's trying to back off into him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have all these guys that in theory, like you think in the moment, they're all just driving flat out as hard as they can, but they're actually trying to like strategically go slow at the right time to like time it. And then, yeah, there's no way everyone's going to be on the same page. And that's why those wrecks are like inevitable on the last lap of that race.
I thought it was a very boring race. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought,
but at least it was late.
Yeah.
At least it was five and a half hours too long.
It was very weird how only the high line seemed to be quick. That was new. And then aside from all the negativity that kind of happened at the start with the crash, then the rain delay, and then obviously the crash at the end, I think the highlight of the whole event was Austin's injury. Like, that was very impressive for his first cup race. Led it at one point, was in the top kind of six for most of the day. Around Daytona, which, I mean, I don't know how challenging it is. It looks very difficult in terms of being able to race it and stay in front and kind of keep your nose clean. So I think he did a hell of a job considering.
He did a great job. And he kind of, I don't know, I mean, Art maybe even had a little bit of an advantage because he got to do it the night before in the Xfinity car, which he won. So, he had a bunch of laps and was, you know, got to kind of try some stuff. Maybe, I don't know, obviously some stuff worked in the Xfinity race, but yeah, he showed up with a good car and, you know, drove a smart race. And yeah, it was awesome to see that. But also, I mean, I know opinions might be split on this, maybe, I don't know, but awesome for Mike McDowell. I mean, I met that guy back in 04 or whatever when he was running the Star Mazda Championship at the time, Indy Pro 2000 as it's known now, and he won that championship. And just such a nice guy. He made the switch over to stock cars when open wheel didn't work out, and he's always kind of been in, you know, not the most front-running teams, and he's just like the nicest dude in the world. And you could see it was a super popular victory in the paddock, which is always kind of fun to see. First win of his career in like 350 something starts, I think I read, and happens to be the Daytona 500. Not a bad way to do it.
Yeah, if you got to win one.
Yeah, if you got to win your first one, you might as well make it a big deal, right, Alex?
I mean, yeah, you want to try and win 500 mile races for sure.
Well, we only have the one, so.
Yeah, but he didn't have to win it on fuel strategy.
No, he just had to win it by taking out the first two. So. I don't know which is better or worse, but
I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch either.
Well, no. You didn't watch Daytona. You had blacked out by the end of Indy.
So you didn't see either, but there's a difference.
Yeah.
Well,
I tried so hard to stay awake for that race. And like I woke up and I didn't.
What, the 2016 Indy 500?
No.
Bored out there, James?
Sadly. Yeah, a little bored. But like we had gone to bed and I had my iPad in bed. I had my earphones in so Becky could sleep. And I was watching and I must have passed out at some point. And I woke up just after the checkered flag. So like I caught what happened at the end. I saw the winner or whatever that went to bed. And then I woke up to 99 text messages from our bourbon group chat, in which you are a member, Alex, of like you guys talking during the last few bits of the race. So like I caught up on everything I'd fallen asleep through by going through your text messages. It was actually pretty helpful.
You're welcome.
So then, speaking of NASCAR, we don't have a ton of time left to talk about it, but I saw yesterday that there's a new show on Netflix out called The Crew.
Yes.
It's a Kevin James sitcom about a NASCAR pit crew. And it got me thinking, because NASCAR, what, they're on Fox, or are they still on NBC, or is it something where they're kind of both?
Both.
And they're not at all on Netflix. So it was just interesting to me to see an ancillary series where they're clearly sponsored by NASCAR, working with NASCAR. There's a ton of NASCAR imagery throughout. The wall has the big NASCAR logo. And it got me thinking about the Drive to Survive and like all the F1 stuff that you're seeing on Netflix. And now that IndyCar is moving over to Peacock, it just got me kind of thinking about all these additional entertainment properties, I guess, that work off of the IP of a sport and how that kind of affects the sports world. I don't know if you guys had anything you wanted to.
I mean, yeah, it affects it positively, right? I mean, you look at what happened with Drive to Survive, and now obviously that's a reality-based show, so you're looking at the actual people, but I still got to think that something like The Crew is going to draw more people to NASCAR racing. I mean, I imagine some people saw their first NASCAR race after watching Talladega Nights. I don't know. Maybe. I don't think anybody started
watching
IndyCar
after Driven.
They
made a sports series based on that movie?
But no, I mean, I always thought anything reality is kind of hard to do. And I actually give Drive to Survive a lot of credit for getting the access that they got and getting certain personalities in the F1 paddock to like actually say what they think, which is kind of cool. I feel like that'd be really hard on IndyCar for some reason, but I always thought that like a scripted drama about IndyCar that was mainly about what happens off track would actually be like a really good TV show.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be, I mean, it's not quite a drama, obviously, but that seems to be the thinking, at least on this Crew show.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious. I haven't watched it yet because it just came out yesterday, but I'm definitely going to check it out. And I wonder, I mean, obviously you're talking about different audience sizes, but I wonder if there is something to that with IndyCar, or if I know you always hear that there's something in development or people are having those conversations behind the scenes, but it'd be interesting to see with the new push for everything being on Peacock and streaming and all that, if there is going to be more of a push for that.
I mean, it'd be awesome. I think first thing they should do is make this show a televised broadcasted show on Peacock. And, you know, I think a cool 7-figure salary for Alex and I, and Tim, you can be there, would be a great place to start. And,
so similar to our serious deal. Yeah. Right. Similar to
exactly
our current deal. Yeah.
Yes.
I actually have to pay to be here.
I mean, I feel like we all kind of do.
I mean, yeah, I don't think we're net up at the end of the day at this point.
No, no. But at least we don't have a big audience.
And our audience,
and no way to market it.
Our audience may have grown slightly, though, because we were the title sponsor of a broadcasted iRace last Thursday night. It was the off track with Hinch and Rossi 180 or something.
I love that you're telling us this now.
We were?
Like, you told me it was coming. You didn't say, you didn't give the date or anything. Like,
yeah, I had some.
We could have mentioned it, could have tweeted about it. Yeah, okay, you had some stuff going on.
I had some stuff going on. But, yeah, so that happened. And maybe we can do it again one day. Don't worry, it didn't cost us anything. I traded something for it. And the guy was like, you can put whatever you want on this race as a thank you. And I chose off track with Hinch and Rossi. I don't know yet.
Okay.
Yeah, we should
somebody
probably
tweet us. If you won, let us know. Even if you didn't
win, we'll look
just
it up.
Pretend you did.
Yeah, we'll look it up. I'll talk to the guy. I'm pretty sure there's a link to the broadcast somewhere. I'll figure it out.
Well, I can tell you one thing for sure. Even if I participated, I wouldn't have won.
Samesies.
Well, on that note, guys, let's reconvene next week. If there are any other, you know, events that we're hosting, James, it'd be good for us to know.
I'll keep you guys posted.
We could promote them. Also, for those of you that are in the Indy area, enjoy the beautiful snow surrounding you. It's
polar vortex for the win.
It's very Canadian of James to have brought all that back down from Canada. So that's very nice of you. And Tim,
you're welcome.
Yeah, have fun in California.
Thanks so much for listening to Off Track with Hinch and Rossi. Keep in contact with us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @AskOffTrack. Or you can follow us individually. We're @Hinchtown and @AlexanderRossi. If you want to follow Thim, though we have no idea why you would, he's @TheTimDurham. We really need to get that changed to @ProducerThim.
The music you heard today is by Ryan Dan of Holland Patton Public Library. Off Track with Hinch and Rossi is produced by Tim Durham. And by that I mean Finn.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.